and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Greetings, Benjamin.
Greetings, Trevor. How are you?
Do you think that rolling the R's should be something that we start a trend of doing?
No, it makes you sound like a cartoon owl. I wouldn't do that.
A cartoon owl?
Yeah.
Why an owl?
I don't know. That's just the image I got.
It's an owl. Because owls don't really... Like, they... To wit, to woo. There's not even an R in there for them to roll.
I'm picturing
there,
a little
there?
Cartoon owl. I love it.
A little cartoon. Perhaps we could come up with a cartoon owl that that's its thing. I mean, is this something you've... does this exist? Is this why you are thinking of it? Or have you created this in your own head? That we could create a character called Roland the Owl.
And Roland. No, we can't have Roland. Roland's famously the rat.
The rat. Okay. All right. Well, I was going to say Rupert, but that's a bear.
Rowan?
Rowan the Owl. Rowan the Owl.
I mean...
Rowan the Owl.
It's not got the alliteration I'd like.
What about Rowl? Rowl the Owl.
Love it. That's it. That's the end of the podcast. We've cracked it. Rowl the Owl.
Rowl the Owl lives in Spain and roams the woods with regularity.
There you go.
One day he came across a snake, a slithery, evil snake. Rowl the Owl said, "Greetings."
I like to think that Rowl the Owl might be a voice coach or some sort of old theatre lovey that goes around teaching people how to speak and enunciate.
Yes, it's better than being like a Rowl moat.
God, there's a reference.
Because that would be a very dark cartoon.
Rowl the Owl moat.
Look, children, Gazza's just arrived. With a fishing rod.
He's got a fishing rod. Yeah. Oh, shit, you were one step ahead of me on that joke.
And some poultry. No, like, this is definitely the beginning of a children's series. I could see this being... And it could be like a proper educational thing. You're right. Maybe for actors, it could be like an educational thing. Like, you know, when an actor's got to come up with an accent or a certain way of speaking, if they've got to do a very clipped Englishman, they can watch the DVD presented by Rowl the Owl.
I tell you what, I'm banking that voice. If any more characters come up in our murder mystery, I'm having Rowl the Owl as my inspiration.
Rowl the Owl will appear. What would Rowl the Owl's first adventure be?
It's hard to say. I think he would be like some... I think I've seen him on the lecture circuit as a... you know, giving TED talks to aspiring actors.
Okay, so he's
on elocution.
So, like, could he be like the new in the actor's studio? You know, that the man that used to do that passed away.
Did he?
Yeah, well, he was about 107 when he was still doing it.
Break that to me gently.
Oh, mate, he was well old when he was still doing it. He's been gone a few years now. I think he was about 109 or something.
Shut up, he was 109. I can't even remember his name, bless him.
I'm going to have to look it up now. What was it? Oh, come on, we must... What was it called?
The pair of us should...
What was it called? Inside the Actors Studio.
Which one of us can find it faster?
James Lipton.
Is he no longer with us?
He was 93 when he passed away.
So not 107.
So it's a good innings, is what I'm saying. I don't mean to be disrespectful to James Lipton. He was very... But what I'm saying is there's an opening there in the market for a replacement.
As a mark of respect to James Lipton, I think our Rowl the Owl needs to be... Rowl the Owl needs to be a replacement TV interview host for the late, great James Lipton from Inside the Actors Studio.
But I think I see this being more... Do you remember Michael Caine in the 80s or so? He famously did these actors' workshops.
Oh, yeah, they were quite cringy, weren't they?
And you go, now, the thing is, when you are talking to someone down the camera, you want to be looking at the camera and you want to focus your eyes on the camera.
I'll tell you what, that's one of your better impressions.
But it could be that. So Raoul the Owl, he's obviously been to RADA.
Oh, lovely touch, yes.
Oh, he's been on the stage for years. He's done all the big parts. He's done Hamlet, King Lear,
Romeo and Juliet.
Obviously he's done Romeo and Juliet.
Richard the Third.
he's done all the Richards.
This might be the dumbest start to a podcast we've ever made. But
it could be our most lucrative. I mean, what if someone's listening thinking, well, there's an idea. Can we copyright this idea right now? When you were a kid, did you ever do, my nan used to teach us this rhyme, and I think we did have to roll the R's. It was round and round the roundabout. Had to say that.
No, I mean, I've heard the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plains.
Yes.
Which I think if Raul is a Spanish name, he would be a fan of the rain in Spain.
Oh, well, obviously, yeah, that would be his go-to catchphrase, wouldn't it?
I think it would be.
Anyway, how's your week been, Ben?
My week has been okay. I went to the cinema, which I was very excited about.
Oh, you mentioned this. Like, was Raoul the Owl in the particular film you saw?
He wasn't, no. It was, as I mentioned...
Well, he may have been, but he was such a good actor, you wouldn't have known.
I mentioned it last week. I saw the 10th installment in the Saw franchise, and I loved it.
Did you?
I did.
I feel I've been rude about the Saw franchise in the past. I'm going to really try not to be rude because I've not seen enough of them to really have an opinion, but it just strikes me that number 10 wouldn't be that different to number 9.
It was, and out of respect for any listeners who might like it or might want to go and see
it. No spoilers.
No spoilers here at all. All I will say, which reveals nothing,
is there's a Saw involved. Can we say that much?
Is that it's basically a bit of a backstory film. The only slight issue with that is that the Saw film franchise started about 20 years ago. Now, the main character played by Tobin Bell, the Jigsaw killer, the issue was this was set in the past sort of thing, but Tobin Bell is 81 years old. It's just a little strange to be trying to follow a film when we're going back in time and the actor is aged 20 years.
Do they not CGI youth him up?
No, they didn't really try that too much, and it was a little bit distracting, but not too much. But it was clearly slightly odd. Why does the main character look quite so old when this is supposed to be set back about 10 years ago?
Yeah.
But, you know, I got over it. I really enjoyed it.
Okay, now, how long is the film?
2 hours.
2 hours. Did you have nice posh seats? Because the thing I find about the cinema, I don't go very often at all for many reasons, but one of the reasons is my arse goes to sleep very quickly. Do you know what I mean? I would say even an hour into a film these days, if I'm in a cinema, like at home, you know, if you're on a sofa, you can shuffle about, you can lie down, you can move around. In any place where you've got to sit in one place, after about an hour, my arse is going, do you know what? You really need to just get up or move about a bit. You know, and I just spend the rest of the film thinking, oh, well, God, when will this end?
Well, therein lies some of the problem. I am quite a punctual person. I don't like to arrive late. Mm. And I do kind of sign up to the philosophy, if you're not 15 minutes early, you're late.
Right, okay, yes, fair enough. I like that. I like punctuality.
So imagine my disdain when the ticket says, Saw 10, East Grinstead Cinema, starts at 8 p.m.
Yeah.
So I arrive, very diligently, at 7:45, ready for my film.
Plenty of time to have a pre-film piss, get your drinks and snacks sorted.
I know the film is 2 hours long, so... Like you say, I've done my ablutions, I'm ready to go. Imagine my horror when the film doesn't start until 8:30.
Oh, no, I don't like this. Now, I think this is a thing, if you're not a regular cinema goer, this gets you every time, because I've been there and done it. You look at the ticket, it says starts. No, that's the time all the fucking endless trails and adverts start. And they go on and on and on. And then the film doesn't start till 8:45, or would you say 8:30?
It's madness. And it was so annoying. And there was this lovely moment. You, by the way, you asked about what seats we had. I pushed the boat out. It was a special, special treat for me and Mrs. Ben. So I paid the extra pound coin to get the
kissing seats,
the premium seats,
the back row.
So we got the best seats in the house, and
nice.
For the first 20 minutes of the trailers, we had the whole cinema to ourselves. It was brilliant.
Because everyone knows not to turn up at 7:45.
We're the only dickheads that didn't get the memo that no one actually shows up at the time it's advertised. But unfortunately, at about 8:25, about five other people arrived. So we still had basically the cinema to ourselves.
Yeah, that's all right.
Not bad at all. However, the general public, even if there's only five of them, can still find ways to annoy me.
This is why cinemas are not a good place. I think there's now scope for, if you want to watch a film out, if you want to go out and watch a film, there should be like individual booths that you sit in that have got like a window so you can still see the screen, but you're isolated from all the other tossers.
Well, the first group of people to come in were a gang of three youngish girls who brought in with them a collection of snacks, a tray of nachos. For God's sake, are you coming to the cinema to watch a film or to have dinner? What are you doing?
I think nachos are not a cinema snack.
Completely agree.
I'm sure we've had this conversation before, but nachos should not be in a cinema. They are inappropriate.
Now, they were initially quite chatty and screechy, which was really getting my blood boiling. But thankfully, that was during the final bit of the trailers and stuff. So thankfully, they shut the fuck up for when the film actually started.
Good, because nothing worse if people are still talking when the film starts. Shut up.
I was a little bit alarmed when, you know how at the very beginning of the film, before it even starts, they do the surround sound test?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Or not even a test, really. That's the wrong word. They just sort of demonstrate how awesome the surround sound is.
Yeah. This is why you've come to the cinema!
Exactly. And it gets very loud. All the noise swells and it's very powerful. And one of the guys goes, "Oh, that was scary." And I thought,
The film hasn't started. You come to a fucking horror film. If you're finding that scary, you're in the wrong film, love.
If the surround sound demonstration has scared you, then you're in for a hell of a 2 hours. And then I was very grateful because the film started and they shut up. Two more people came in afterwards and they sat close. In an empty cinema, do you need to sit so close to me? I'm in the priority seats, don't you know? I've paid an extra pound for this. Can't you fuck off with the rest of the plebs down the front?
Have they paid for the premier seats?
I have no idea.
Because they're not just yours. If there are others available, others may have paid for the same experience.
However, so once I'm grateful that these girls have shut up, the film begins. And often, I don't know if I'm getting older or my hearing is getting worse, I really have to focus in films now because people seem to be muttering. I want to say, speak up. So I'm concentrating really hard on trying to follow the plot. I've invested 9 films over 9 days to catch up with the backstory of this. Yeah. This is the highlight of my week. And I'm sitting there watching.
Oh, Christ. Oh, for God's sake. I mean, it's a horrible noise.
I apologise that I had to make that demonstration. That must have been incredibly unpleasant for you and our listeners. It was like having a horse in the cinema grazing on this tray of nachos and this crinkly bag of sweets relentlessly.
Man.
And you can't do anything, can you? Because you can't go and complain to the staff at the counter that these idiots are making a hell of a lot of noise ruining the film, because They're the ones selling them the shit.
Yeah, I mean, that's their profit margin.
I bought, by the way, this is a side rant, I did buy a little bag of chocolates so that me and Mrs. Ben could have a little cheeky minstrel chocolate.
Well, the nice thing about a little chocolate thing, I mean, you've still got the bag to contend with, but if you can, I think there are quiet ways of dealing with a bag, but the nice thing about a chocolate is you can suck it away.
And the nice thing about the Saw films is that there is often a bit where there's a terrifying scene with a lot of loud noise. That's when you go for a sneaky chocolate.
Yes, you've got it. Yes, that's the other thing. I find that you do that if you're conscientious enough to consider other people. And I think those of us that are conscientious enough to think of other people are now in a minority. I think most people are so selfish and self-obsessed that they all crinkle wrappers all the way through. But those of us that are conscientious, we will do that. We will time our entry into the bag of sweets with a noisy bit of the film.
Exactly. It's just common courtesy. But yeah, this was my side rant. That little bag of chocolates. Now, I don't know how good you are with numbers and metric amounts. But speaking of which, another side, I'm going on so many tangents. John was kind enough to get in touch with us and let me know that when I mocked your car's temperature and I said I thought it would be in Fahrenheit, I was completely wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Completely wrong.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, I knew you would have been.
So I paid for a...
As if I'm going to take car advice from you.
I paid for a 125-gram bag of chocolates.
That sounds quite a lot. It sounds like a big bag.
Are you kidding? 125 grams. That's nothing. That is so little. They charged me £3.40 for a miniature pouch of these chocolates. I was fuming.
Well, this is the thing in a cinema. If you go, you know you're going to be fleeced on those things. You've got to, you know, go prepared. Go to the little corner shop before you go in the cinema. Take your own. The times... that I've learned that lesson now. It's like I'm not buying anything. I might buy a drink, possibly, from the cinema itself. But again, I find the drink has got another problem going on because I'm conscientious, I always worry about the slurping straw bit as you get towards the end of the drink. So I'll always end up wasting probably about a third of the drink because I get to that point where I'm slightly concerned that if I have a sip, I'm going to go... And I think about everyone else. But I bet no one else gives a shit about that.
You know what?
You listen to everyone else. It's got that noise going on. All the your rappers going...
I think when all the podcast millions that we've earned, when that dries up, we should go into Trev and Ben's cinemas.
Yes.
And it will be the perfect introvert cinema experience.
I like it. Can we call it Rowls?
Rowls cinema experience.
And all the logo will be an owl, obviously, and all the imaging on all the merchandise will have noiseless drinks. We'll come up with a way of having noiseless...
Absolutely.
Well, the way to have a noiseless...
No ice.
Well, no ice and no fucking straw.
And what we'll have is, before every feature film starts, there'll be no trailers. The film will start at 8 p.m. when it says it's going to start.
Yeah.
And Rowl the Owl will come on for a 30-second commercial, and he'll say, if you are caught eating, chewing, slurping, spitting, you will be shot on sight. Welcome shot to Trev and Ben Cinemas. Enjoy the film.
I mean, I'm all for strictness, Ben, but shooting people on sight would seem a little bit harsh. Can we also make sure that if you're late, you don't get in? You know, I can't stand that. I find, particularly if it's a busy cinema, and I find this the same if you go to the theatre, right, is you sit down, and let's say you've sat down and the seats either side of you are free.
Yeah.
But for the first 20-odd minutes, you're sitting there thinking, oh, some bastard's going to come in late.
Yeah.
We're going to have to all get up to fucking move. And that ruins about the first 20, 25 minutes, because then you can start thinking, well, if they haven't come now, they're not coming. But I hate that. And then you know that someone's going to come. Like, 10 minutes into it, you've all got to get up. I think if you're late, you don't get in. Plain and simple. We lock the doors at 8 o'clock. If you're late, you can fuck off. No refund. Just
I love
out.
It.
Gone.
I think that's a fantastic idea. It shouldn't be a case of the film starts at 8. It should be the case of the doors are bolted at 8.
Yes. Yes.
And I got the last laugh because when the film finally finished, and now this isn't... Again, I promise, no spoilers. When the film finished... They all cleared off and leaving their nacho detritus behind them, no doubt.
They wouldn't have cleared up after themselves, those sort of people.
Of course not.
No.
So it was just me and Mrs. Ben left in the cinema, and we're sort of diligently tidying away our rubbish like responsible adults.
Yes.
Because putting that overpriced chocolate bag in the bin.
Yeah.
Then, to my immense surprise, halfway through the credits, we get a bonus scene.
Yes. So it's always worth sitting through the credits.
If you're going to watch Saw 10, when the credits start rolling, don't leave straight away, because there is a little hidden Easter egg scene in there. There you go. Now you've learned something from listening to our podcast, and come to Trev and Ben Cinemas.
Yeah, the Rowls. No, I agree. I always think... like that whole thing, you stand up and get out the moment the first credit rolls. I don't get that. One, wait for the rush to go because everyone's doing it. And two, as you say, you might miss something.
Yeah.
You know, I've often found this, like when you go to somewhere, the impatience to leave somewhere. I always think if you've paid money to go and see something, like I've never understood, and I've argued with friends about this. I don't understand if you go to a football match, you leave early.
No.
Now, maybe if you're 7-0 down, you think, yeah, fair enough. But when I've been to a match and it's 1-1 and people are leaving on the 85th minute, you go, what? Why? Oh, I've got to beat the rush on the trains. I've got to beat the traffic. Well, why have you fucking come then?
I completely agree.
Part of the deal of coming to something to this is that you have to deal with the crowds afterwards. If you don't like crowds, like I tend not to now, so I won't go to things like that. But if you go in, you might as well stay to the end because you don't know what might happen. I love those things where you see people have left the ground and then a goal goes in. Their team have equalised or got a last-minute winner and they've left. I mean, I heard a story the other day. I was listening to a podcast and the guy was saying his mate was at the 1999 Champions League final.
Right.
Manchester United Bayern Munich. You know the story, right? United 1-0 down, goes to injury time. His mate has left the ground.
Oh, no.
And he's walking out the ground. United score their equaliser. Now, he wasn't quite out the ground, so he did say he got back in to see the winning goal just a few seconds later. But imagine if he got out the ground, was halfway down the road, he would have missed the two goals, would have missed his team winning the Champions League. For what? Oh, I've got to get the train. I can't bear to be around if my team have lost. Look, it's horrible when your team lose. We've all fucking been there. But grow up. Grow up about it. I fucking hate this. Oh, mate, this is another bugbear of mine at the moment. I've got a real bee in my bonnet about football supporters. I've loved football for so many years, but the longer I follow football, the less I like football supporters because of these sort of childish, fucking immature ways of behaving. Fucking grow up, people.
Well, I actually think you are, without a doubt, of the two of us, the bigger football fan by a country. It's not even close. You are much more of a football fan than I am. But I think in this exact instance, I am a little bit more scorched earth than you.
Right.
Because even if my team are 7-0 down, I won't leave early.
Yeah.
I will stand and wait till the full-time whistle, and then I will applaud their effort, even if they were shite.
Yes.
I will stay till the bitter end. But that's, I think, a difference between you and me. You're an Arsenal fan, so you're not really used to sticking to it to the bitter end like a Fulham fan is.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah,
I think this is what the world needs. It's for you and me to decide how social etiquette...
How to behave.
Exactly. In various social occasions, cinema, yes, football matches, theatres, things like that.
Yes.
It needs you and me and Raul, to designate exactly what goes on.
Can I say another one of my major rules will be, and I'm not quite sure how we'll enforce this, but certainly in the bounds of a cinema or a theatre, no windbreaking.
I mean, that's harder to enforce because it's obviously a bit of a mystery sometimes who's committed the crime.
Yes. And sometimes that mystery lasts for years. I was with a very old friend of mine the other day, and I'm not going to name this person because I want to save their dignity.
Okay, well, I'll be the judge of that because they might not deserve their dignity spared, depending on what this... Because I've got a nasty suspicion where this story's going.
So years ago, we went to the cinema to see a film and sitting watching the film, and at regular intervals throughout the film, there was just this... I don't want to get into it too much because I know that I get into trouble for talking about these matters maybe a bit too much. But all I'll say is there was a very unpleasant smell on a very regular basis. And both of us were sort of, where's that? Where the hell's that coming from? It's just...
Don't tell me he was selling the where's that smell coming from as well, was it?
She.
She!
And it wasn't till years later... Years later, she finally admitted to me that she'd had a bit of an upset stomach, and it was her the whole time. Now, I'm sorry, even though she's a very good friend of mine, if I'd known that, I'd have had her removed. I'd have got security involved. I said, she's a health hazard. She's actually a health hazard for everyone in this cinema. I think we need to have her removed. Because it wasn't pleasant at all. And as I say, I'm saving her blushes. I'm not going to mention the name.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Does this person ever happen to listen to our podcast?
I can't say too
okay.
much.
Well, that tells me everything I need to know. So my answer to that is... You know who you are.
Talking of movies, Ben.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see this week that Disney has celebrated its 100th anniversary, Disney Studios?
That has passed me by. I didn't know that.
I mean, it's an amazing thing, isn't it? For 100 years, they've been creating these iconic films, cartoons, and characters. Well, I wonder whether Raoul the Owl could be taken on by Disney. That could become a brand new... I'd quite happily hand over... I'd quite happily sell the rights to Raoul the Owl to Disney if they want it.
I'm not sure they'll be that keen after you compared him to someone who was the subject of a sort of national manhunt.
Well, no, that was sort of an early idea. That was sort of in the development stage. I think the character's more rounded now. He's the brand that runs a chain of very successful cinemas. He's a very friendly character. Kids love him. Adults love him.
Yeah.
He's got all the personality and all the traits that Disney would look for in a character that would make them a lot of money. And I think what would we do? I think I'd want a percentage of the profits from anything Raoul the Owl and Disney together.
I should quickly say, for any international listeners who didn't quite understand the Raoul Moat reference, Google it.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm just saying that that's not the final idea. It was a very early incarnation of Raoul the Owl, and it was an idea that didn't work. I think that's the beauty of workshopping ideas like this, that sometimes
people tend to workshop behind the scenes, not on the actual show.
Yeah, and also people probably wouldn't want that out there. If they come up with that idea, they'd probably think, I'm not sure I'd want people to think that that's where I'm thinking, that's where I've gone with this, a very dark and terrible, sad story. But, you know, that's the beauty of this podcast. What you see is what you get. So anyway, I was thinking about Disney, and I got thinking about, like, what's your favourite Disney films?
Well, I hate to be a bit of a spanner in the works, but I have... recently, well, I say recently, in the last couple of years, boycotted Disney.
Why?
It's because they dropped Johnny Depp as Captain Jack Sparrow from the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise. And I've never forgiven them.
Never forgiven them for that?
No. And I won't.
So that's it. As far as you're concerned, Disney's dead to you.
Yep.
Disney's cryogenically frozen to you.
We can feed the mouse to Raoul the Owl. Mickey is dead to me.
Oh, yeah, all the mouse family. Mickey and Minnie. That's a couple of meals sorted out already, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I think they are cannon fodder for our new podcast mascot.
And depending on how big Raoul is, I mean, he might be able to take on, like, Goofy and Pluto.
They're both dogs, aren't they?
All right. Well, it could certainly take all the rescuers and Chip and Dale. I don't know if they're Disney, but it could take all the little animals. It could certainly take. But, yeah, it wouldn't be able to take on, like, the Lion King. I bet it could take on little Simba. I reckon an owl could take a little lion cub.
I don't know what my favourite Disney film is.
I mean, growing up, like, you know, you must have watched, like, Mary Poppins. That must have been a staple of your childhood, surely.
I was never that keen on Mary Poppins.
Oh, man, I love Mary Poppins. It's a cracking movie.
What other ones are there? I mean,
Chitty Bang Bang.
Never seen it.
If it's, oh, we're going to uncover a lot of things here that are going to make me unhappy, aren't we? Okay, well, I know you're obviously younger than me, so let's bring it forward a little bit. The Lion King. You must have seen The Lion King.
I have seen The Lion King. Does Toy Story count as Disney, or is that... Was that DreamWorks or Pixar? Or I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that is a Disney product.
I think the one I remember the most vividly was probably the Beauty and the Beast animation. I probably watched quite a lot growing up.
Oh, so that's one I've never seen.
Really?
Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Bruce Forsyth's in Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Is he really?
I always like that bit when he turns up. He's sort of in the... They're doing a song and Brucey suddenly turns like...
Did he not have any proper dialogue?
No, they just brought him one. Nice to draw you. Nice.
Was Song of the South a Disney film?
Song of the South is a Disney film. It's a very controversial Disney film.
I'm not sure you can buy it anymore. I don't think they sell it. I think they might have wiped all... copies from history from that one.
I do have it on VHS.
That must be worth a few quid.
It probably is, yeah. It's one of those things that... I don't actually have it in my house. It's in someone else's house right now. And we've always said we should get this transferred to DVD because the video will fuck up sometimes. I mean, I haven't seen it since I was a kid, but I wonder whether if I watch it now, knowing... the controversy around it, I go, oh, do you know what? It's probably best we don't put it on DVD. It's probably best it just sits on the shelf and it's never looked at ever again. But then again, I mean, look, I'm not defending it. But it's got a cracking song in it. Zippity doo dah, zippity day. I mean, surely we should still be able to sing that. My, what a wonderful day.
Scared me. Just imagine though, one day when you're no longer here, mate,
yeah,
and someone's got to go through all your possessions and they find multiple copies of the Song of the South burned to DVD, and the eulogy will have to be altered. Trevor Smith, keen racist.
Well, it's when they uncover all the other
distributor of controversial material.
It's when they uncover all the other stuff that worries me. What other Disney? I mean, Aladdin's got to be one of the best Disney films of all time.
That's a good one,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I was thinking about this earlier, and then I started to get a little bit sad about Robin Williams.
Trev.
And then I started to get a little bit angry that they'd remade it. Not that late. You know, I think there's a thing where you think, why are you remaking a film that's not that old? I mean, it probably was 30 years old by the time they but you can't... Look, Will Smith is a great actor, right? But he's not Robin Williams. Why put him in this live-action remake that's... I've not watched it all the way through. I've seen clips. It's shit. Just, you know, it's not the same. I think if you're going to remake it, you've got all of Robin Williams' recordings... Right? You could CGI a genie that still has the essence of Robin Williams. You could still have some live action around it to just put Will Smith in.
This is a small bugbear of mine because some people, like yourself at the moment, are quick to say, oh, ruined it. No, it shouldn't be that. Shouldn't be that. Should be different. Shouldn't do that. Like the Ghostbusters remake with the female cast, people got really upset about that.
No, I think there's a difference, though, because that was a sort of a reboot. It didn't really work, but I can kind of get that. But when you're remaking something and you're not really changing the story or the characters, what is the point of that? What is the point of it? I mean, I know they wanted to make it live action. I did watch they remade the Jungle Book. Oh, I mean, that's one of my favourites. Even as an adult, I can still enjoy the Jungle Book. Absolutely love that, right? And then they did that live remake, and I watched it. I mean, it's all right, but it's got none of the charm of the original 60s animation. And what I was thinking was, like, you see, am I just an old fucker now? Where younger people would have seen the live action version, haven't seen the animated, and will think that's the definitive version. And I just think, oh, what a travesty that there was no need to make a live action version of the Jungle Book. The original is so perfect, there is no need for
it. Well, what my point was going to be was that just because there's a new thing, doesn't mean the old thing ceases to exist. So you can still enjoy Robin Williams as the genie in the original Aladdin. And just because they've made a dreadful remake with Will Smith doesn't mean that the first thing doesn't exist. I'm very nervous that my favourite sitcom of all time has made a return, Frasier.
And have you seen any of it yet?
I haven't seen any of it yet because I don't have Paramount Plus. But I saw the trailer and I was a little edgy that it didn't look great. However, I'm not going to prejudge. I'm going to give it a fair try. But even if it is shite, it won't mean that the existing 11 series are changed in any way. They still exist.
And of course, this is just a continuation of the story. So it doesn't, it's not like they're remaking Frasier. They're just bringing the story up to date. So you might find...
So your problem is with the actual remake
of the story. My problem is that you're remaking something that doesn't need to be remade. And I know that I'm sounding like an old person here, because I remember hearing people of an older generation saying that about films that they'd watch when they were kids in the 50s and 60s that were then remade later on in the 80s and 90s. I mean, one of the kind of famous ones would be Miracle on 34th Street, right? Classic Christmas movie.
Is that the one every time angel gets his wings, you clap your hands or something along those lines?
No, I think
I butchered that, but is that about it?
No, isn't that It's a Wonderful Life?
I don't know. I've not seen these whole
things.
Yeah,
films. No, I think that's It's a Wonderful Life when that's about, because the angel comes down to look after the, oh, what's the character? I can't remember. It's James Stewart. Oh, James Stewart.
Are you all right?
That's my impression of James Stewart.
That sounds like a sea lion. What the fuck was that?
No, he always went into a line doing that. Whatever you say. I love Jimmy Stewart. Yeah. I mean, I love Jimmy Stewart. Harvey is one of my favourite films of all time. Have you ever seen Harvey?
No. No. I forget Harvey how old you are sometimes.
I mean, Harvey was made, I guess, in the 50s. But they did, I mean, interestingly enough, they did remake it in the States in the 70s with Jimmy Stewart in it again. But basically, Jimmy Stewart is this man, Edward P. Dowd, I think his name is. Edward P. Dowd.
And he sounds a lot like Jimmy Stewart.
Well, no, it is Jimmy Stewart. Jimmy Stewart, I'm Edward P. Dowd. And he sees a 6-foot white rabbit, a puka, I think it's called. It's like his imaginary friend. But he's not imaginary. He exists. And he's called Harvey. And he goes around. But he's such a gentle soul. But anyway, that's Jimmy Stewart. Harvey, don't leave. Harvey. But that's the one. Yeah, he's in A Wonderful Life. Anyway, I think that's the one with the ages. But Miracle on 34th Street. I keep getting derailed today.
I know.
Jimmy Stewart would have been brilliant in Miracle on 34th Street. But if I say to you Miracle on 34th Street, who comes to mind?
Absolutely nobody, because I was thinking of the wrong film, as I think we've established. Well, so I don't know.
Well, because the one I will think of is the 1990s version with Dickie Attenborough, who plays Kris Kringle.
Oh, right.
And the little girl in it is the little girl from Mrs. Doubtfire, the youngest kid in that. She's the little girl. But, of course, I think the original film, I think it might have even been like in the 1930s or something, was the original film. So there would have been people in the 1990s when that was made going, well, why are they remaking Miracle on 34th Street? And yet, to me, that's the definitive versions. I suppose that's the argument, isn't it? In that, you know, I can see a version that's made in the 90s, having not seen the original, and think, well, better that. You can't. But maybe you could if Jimmy Stewart had been in it.
It's almost a bit simpler than that. I think it's just that some things can be remade and altered, and that's okay. But there are some things which were just so perfect to begin with,
yes,
like Robin Williams as the genie,
yes,
in the original Aladdin. Just don't fuck with it. You don't need to remake it. It was perfect the first time.
I think that's why they've never remade It's a Wonderful Life. It couldn't be any better. It is the best Christmas movie. I only watched it for the first time a couple of years ago. I'd never seen it. It was one of those films that everyone said, "Oh, you must watch It's a Wonderful Life." And I just, "Oh, yeah, everyone bangs on about It's a Wonderful Life." And then I watched it. Oh, it's terrible. I don't think I will have a Christmas now without Clarence.
Well, yeah, maybe, you know, Trev and Ben Productions could do our own, you know, remake of It's a Wonderful Life. You as the sort of sea lion character, me off stage with a bucket of fish, just throwing...
Mary, Mary!
You know, earlier on I complimented you on one of your better impressions. That's got to be one of your worst.
No, you don't know what he sounds like. I mean, you don't know how spot on I'm getting this. You know, if you don't know Jimmy Stewart, you can't say it's a bad impression, can you? Mary!
Unless he's a sea lion, I don't think it's a very good impression.
Okay, Clarence! So anyway... But what films could they remake? Like, think of shit films that you could remake and make better. I mean, I get into a lot of trouble for this. I reckon you can make Citizen Kane a hell of a lot better than it is. Like, this film that's held up as this sort of greatest film of all time. I've talked about this, but it's so boring. I reckon I could get that made again, speed it up, and get it over a lot quicker than it is. Yeah, I reckon I could remake that better.
Again, I've never seen Citizen Kane.
Don't bother. Don't bother. I gave it another go a while back. I thought perhaps I was grossly unfair the first time I watched it. You know, everyone says how good it is, so give it another go.
Now,
a waste of time.
Did you watch The Irishman or did you give up? I can't remember.
No, I saw it through, but my God, what a waste of 3 hours that was. I mean, honestly, again, all the hype about that. Jesus Christ.
It did quite well, though. It won a lot of awards, didn't it?
I know, but that's because it's got all of... You got Al Pacino in, you got Robert De Niro. Come on, and they're all paying gangsters. Hey, who are you fucking talking to? Hey, you want to have a fight? Hey! It's basically that for 3 hours.
You sound like Jackie Mason.
It's basically them sort of getting younger and older. They start off going, hey, you wanna? And then by the end of it, they go, hey, yeah, you wanna? You're
the best Jackie Mason I've ever heard.
That's not what I'm doing. By the end of it, hey, no, I'm such an old man now, but you still have a fucking fight. Come on, everyone. Hey, fucking hell. fucking dreadful films. So I reckon I could remake that. I'd make it a lot, like, it wouldn't be 3 hours. Get that done much quicker. But, hey, yeah, you want to fight? Hey, I'm old now. The end. That'll be it.
Well, that's happy birthday, Disney. 100 years summed up nicely.
Well, Ben, we've reached the part of the podcast that everyone's been waiting for. They've waded through all the shit that's come before to get to this point because it is time for the penultimate episode of Shadows of Deceit, a murder mystery at Whimsy Manor.
So do we need to have a quick recap as to where we leave our story?
Please, yes, because I can't remember.
Okay, well, there was initially a murder victim who was discovered quite early on in the story. We have no idea who that is.
Yeah, right.
Then we had Dr. Edmund Winters enter the game, explain something to the cast of our story, basically gave them a bit of a history lesson on Whimsy Manor. I mean, we weren't privy to this, but the characters were.
No, we don't know what was said. Yeah.
Then there was a thud in the library, which we discovered in the next episode that thud somehow was the same Dr. Edmund Winters, now deceased.
Now deceased, so he's a second murder victim.
The characters discovered a mysterious bookshelf with some letters on it or some sort of mysterious message.
Yes.
And then out of nowhere, we had Miss Lily Fitzgerald, a psychic.
Psychic, that's right.
Who entered the story and once again shared vital information that the audience aren't privy to.
So here we go. Then, as always, I've not seen the script. You've not seen the script. This has all been AI generated. So I'm going to open the script right now. And here we go. Shadows of Deceit, a murder mystery at Whimsy Manor, part 5.
Unmasking Shadows. The eerie darkness engulfs the room.
Oh, yeah, we should say at the end of last week's episode, all the lights went out. We probably should say
that. Oh, yes, yes, that is important, yes. The eerie darkness engulfs the room, leaving the guests in a state of heightened tension. Miss Fitzgerald's revelations and the letters they found in the hidden compartment weigh heavily on their minds.
We must stay calm. The darkness won't last forever.
I can't see a thing.
Where is everyone? As the group fumbles in the dark, a chilling whisper fills the air. Now, we have a creative issue here, Trev. One of us has to make a choice. What do we do?
I mean, I could do it as Jimmy Stewart.
I mean, your choices are Jimmy Stewart or Raoul the Owl.
Well, I think Raoul the Owl should have his debut.
Okay, right. I'll give you the clue. I'll help the audience as well, right? As the group fumbles in the dark, a chilling whisper fills the air. A whisper in an altered voice. Why is no one talking, Trev?
I thought you were going to do Raoul the Owl.
No, I thought you were doing the voice.
I'll do Raoul the Owl.
We agreed. Fuck me. What? This is more incompetent than usual. We're both just sitting here waiting for the other one to speak.
Look closer to the truth than you realise.
Did anyone else hear that?
I was readying myself for that. Go on.
It appears our shadowy friend is still among us.
With trembling hands, they light candles, revealing an unsettling sight. On the library wall, a mural depicts a haunting scene. A group of figures, each resembling one of the guests, engaged in a sinister ritual.
This mural! It's a grotesque reflection of us!
I believe it represents our shared past and the secrets we hold.
I'm a bit lost as to how we do this. Miss Fitzgerald, with an air of determination, begins to chant incantations.
Spirits of this manor, reveal to us the truth. Spirits of this manor, reveal to us the truth. Spirits of this manor, reveal to us the truth.
Suddenly, the candles flicker wildly, casting eerie shadows on the mural. As if guided by an unseen force, Miss Fitzgerald's hand points to a figure on the mural. A figure bearing an uncanny resemblance to one of the guests.
It's one of us.
This can't be a coincidence. Our pasts are intertwined with the manor's dark history. Vix McAllister, her voice trembling, asks the question on everyone's mind. Which one of us is it? Who is the killer? I mean, it's a bit Route 1, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's doing what we asked it to do.
True. But, I mean, who is the killer? I mean, that is kind of the raison d'etre of the murder mystery. But fair enough, Vix. You crack on. Before they can react, lights suddenly come back on, and they are greeted by an unsettling sight. A life-sized porcelain doll stands at the library entrance, dressed in clothes that resemble those of the figure in the mural. Are you all following at home?
Shit's just got real, folks. Isn't it? Right.
I don't know what that meant.
What do you mean you know what it means? There's suddenly a life-size porcelain doll in the library entrance.
Freaky.
Dressed in clothes that resemble one of the figures in the mural, and one of the figures in the mural is one of us.
Right, okay. I'm up to... I mean, it's creepy as shit, but I'm up to speed now.
It's got nothing on saw this, is it?
That doll wasn't here before.
I hate that. As they cautiously approach the doll, they notice a chilling message scrawled on a nearby mirror in red lipstick.
I mean, what's the point of saying message on the mirror written? They know it's a fucking audio thing. Surely one of the characters should say what's written.
Yes, our next script prompt is to basically have a written message, which is great.
Yes.
Okay, so...
I think Headmistress Worthington should do the line.
Oh, bless you, because she has very little dialogue.
I mean, unless she's supposed to be dead by now, but yeah, give her the line. This is what's written on the mirror.
Tonight, one of you will join the shadows forever!
Fucking hell.
The realization sinks in that the killer is among them, and they are running out of time to unmask the murderer.
We must act quickly. The manor is closing in on us.
The tension escalates as they prepare to confront the darkness that looms over Wimsley Manor. The identity of the killer remains a haunting enigma. Suddenly, the ominous sound of a clock striking midnight echoes through the manor, signalling the arrival of the fateful finale.
Well, we have reached a crescendo. There's no doubt about that. The finale next week is going to be one hell of a ride.
I don't feel we learned much more, to be honest. But
yeah, but it's got fucking freaky. We've got a porcelain doll that's turned up and it's suddenly gone all chucky on us, isn't it?
That is really quite unsettling.
We've seen a picture of us all, or at least figures that resemble us all, carrying out some kind of rituals, wasn't it? Some sort of satanic rituals? Sinister. Sinister, not satanic.
Sinister.
Sinister.
There we go. And what's slightly surprising to me is that the porcelain doll resembles one of our cast.
Mm.
However, they've not managed to identify who that is.
I think some clues would have been nice there, just to point us in a direction. You know, just an idea, like, is there, you know, is it wearing glasses? Because then it might have been Arnold Whitman. Has it got like a beret on? In which case, we know it would have been Charles de Clare, perhaps one of my paintings. He didn't say that this week.
Didn't.
So, I missed the line.
It's kind of like, what's that? Is it Stockholm Syndrome, where you start to sort of get fondness for your captor?
Yeah, I'm sort of getting a fondness for Charles Leclerc. He's
Charles Leclerc?
What's his name?
Jean-Pierre Leclerc.
Oh, Jean-Pierre. Well, that's how much I love him. I call him Charles.
Charlie to his friends, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of a friendly moniker that I've given him.
I always complain.
Who's Charles Leclerc? He's a Formula One driver, isn't he?
I have no idea. I always complained.
That's one of my cars, we love you.
I always complained when he mentioned his paintings, and now this week he hasn't. I feel cheated.
You feel cheated, don't you? So anyway, are we any nearer to a suspect, or do we think, we don't know, of course, it will all be revealed in the finale next week, but maybe this is a bit like that... What's that famous Agatha Christie thing, like when they're on a train and is it the woman vanishes or something? Is it one of those? Or no, or am I thinking of Murder on the Orient Express? Well, basically everyone's done it. Everyone's involved. Spoiler alert, if you've not seen either of those films, I can't tell you which one it is. One of those, everyone's done it. And it could
the
be like
finale.
That.
We're back next week.
Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, a couple of recommendations of things for you to watch or listen to this week. What you got for us, Ben?
This week I have The Reckoning on the BBC iPlayer, which you can find. It's a sort of dramatisation retelling of the Jimmy Savile story, played by Steve Coogan. It's not going to be for everyone because it's very dark and uncomfortable. But it's very good. I've only seen episode one so far. It's a touch slow in places, but so far, so good. Steve Coogan's representation of Jimmy Savile is eerily good.
I mean, I've watched all four episodes.
Oh, you've done the whole lot?
I've binged a lot, and I mean, it is incredible. Like, all the controversy aside, I don't want to get into that, right? It, just as a piece of drama and a performance... If there was an Oscar for this, he should win it. He's Steve Coogan. He just embodies the man, the creepiness, the nastiness, but he's got all the mannerisms, all the patterns of speech. It is the most incredible performance, and I've got to say, it's the best drama I've seen in a very long time, and Steve Coogan should clean up at all the awards for his performance. And as I say, look, the controversies are there. You can decide to watch it or not based on whatever you feel, but if you want to watch it, I've got to tell you, it is
superb.
If you feel it'll make you uncomfortable, then probably give it a wide berth and just ignore it. But yes, it's stunning how it's put together. It really is good.
Now, the other thing I'm going to recommend, this one isn't particularly, it's not a light-hearted thing either. This is a drama that's on Netflix. I think it was originally on Channel 5, but I didn't see it then. It's on Netflix. It's only, I think, 3 episodes. It's called Maxine. It's the story of Maxine Carr, and she was the woman who was with Ian Huntley in the Soham murders. So it's not...
Oh, my God.
It's a particular... I mean, look, we've come with some very dark recommendations this week, but I have to say, it's a brilliant drama again. Now, on the other side of things, just to go lighthearted here, Ben, just go a little bit lighthearted, I want to recommend the new series of Taskmaster. I think we are 3 episodes in now.
Nice.
And I am absolutely loving that. You know, it's like when a new series starts, you think, oh, am I going to like all the guests? I don't know some of them that well. And yet, within an episode, you like them all. You know, it's just every, I don't know how they do it. Every series, you just think all these people, some of whom you don't know particularly well. I mean, there's an Australian guy, Sam, can't think of his surname. He is the most quirky fucker, but I'm growing to like him more and more week in, week out. He's so quirky. I love it.
I'll definitely give that a go. That sounds good. I always love Taskmaster.
And the final thing I'm going to throw out there is, if you haven't heard it, go on the BBC Sounds app and listen to the episode of Desert Island Discs with Adrian Edmondson. He talks very movingly about Rick Mail, but it's and he talks very openly about his life, his ups and downs, but it's just the most heartwarming episode. I'm not a massive listener of Desert Island Discs. It really does depend on a guest if I'm going to listen, but that one I recommend heartily.
I've already got that one in my library to listen to, because I was very much looking forward to that one, so that's good to hear. That's a good listen.
Well, there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trev and Ben on Twitter. Next week, the big 200th episode, Ben. Oh, isn't it exciting? Or the big 200. Hey, I like it. They're good, the big 200.
Fuck me. 200 episodes of this shit.
And the big finale of the murder mystery. What a week it will be.
Can't wait.
Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.